Hi there, Dr. B here with your Module 2 clarifying lecture. I'm going to be experimenting a little bit and hoping to offer you this clarifying lecture in just an audio format, for example, Podbean. So watch out for that. I will send an announcement if I can make it work. All right, let's get to it. Couple of housekeeping things. I just wanted to make sure that you knew. There was a dud question on the fluency quiz, and your grades have been updated because I gave you the points if you if there were two answers that were really close. So if you answered one or the other, I gave you credit for that. So check your grades. They may have changed. This video can be rewound, sped up, slowed down. It's not like the other videos in the player. And I did get some feedback that I talk a little bit too fast. I know that I'm a fast talker, and the more I try to slow it down, the faster I get. So feel free to use the 0.5 speed if I'm just way too fast. If you're okay and you want to speed it up to 2x, be my guest as well. I did run some preliminary statistics about your usage as a group, and I'm seeing a lot of you whose access is well below average, and it seems to be affecting your grade. And I'm also getting questions that are in the clarifying lectures that are in the module checklists. Some of you are like, well, where's the one place where I can find all of the information? It is in the module checklist, and if it's not there, it tells you where to get that information. So make sure that you're interacting with the site a couple of times per week, ideally every day. That's the best way to work with this course. I did also regrade the discussions if you added to them and you didn't do them correctly this week, but that's just a courtesy for this module. Going forward, I'll be whatever grade you get, that's the final grade. I won't be regrading and giving you more points if you go back and fix something. So make sure you're looking at the instructions. Remember, if you post a video, that still means that you need to answer twice. If there's only one video, you still need to answer twice. You still need to answer the question, and you can also respond to somebody else's response, maybe challenging them or expanding upon it. The only time I want you to jump groups is as an absolute last resort. So please do not jump groups if you can. Let's see. And the last one is there are a number of you who have not submitted a name for your behaviorist biography. You may have put it in the Google Sheet, but you haven't actually made a submission. I can't grade you without a submission. So be sure to click on that link, write the name in, or put a link to the Google Sheet. Either one will work, and then I can get you your grade. Okay, let's go to the discussion board. Wanted to clear up a few things, also give some shout outs to people. I love it when you're saying you don't get something. It is so cool because then I can go back and I can answer that question, or somebody in the class can answer that for you. It really garners discussion. Again, you're not meant to be an expert. You're meant to give it your best shot in your own words. It seems that most of you are getting the distinction between free will and determinism. Determinism means that things are lawful and that there are patterns in things. Free will means that we choose everything, and that we're free to do whatever we want to do at any given time. So most of you are getting that, and I'm really pleased to see that. But one of the things that I see, and I'm seeing that you're losing points on this and also in the inner teaching, are terms. And what are some things that I'm seeing? The first is a lot of mentalism, and this is a hard habit to break. I totally get that. I'm seeing a lot of people saying they like reinforcement, or they want something, or attention seeking. And what I want you to think about is, when I'm writing this out, Do I have to go into somebody's head to verify it for sure, to actually observe? So if I say that, for example, my dog likes elk antlers, I would have to go into her head and see if she likes them. I might say that she chooses elk antlers over nylon bones, or I might say I did a preference assessment and the highest one was elk antler, but I can't say, oh, well, she likes it. Also, be careful of talking about mentalistic processes when you're talking about reinforcement. We don't need cognition, we don't need language, we don't need any of that stuff for reinforcement to work. Reinforcement establishes a pattern. We can love it, we can hate it, we can have thoughts about it, but those are all byproducts of the contingency. It's not the contingency itself. So you don't have to be aware of reinforcement. You don't have to know what's going on. In fact, how do you measure those things? It's just a relationship. It's a process. So be careful of that mentalism. I'll keep giving you feedback on that. Michelle will give you feedback on that. And we'll also have a third person who will be joining us, Ms. Tina Long, who is a doc student at Mason, will also be helping you and giving you feedback on that. Remember, reward and reinforcement are two different things. So reinforcement means to strengthen, and reward is something pretty. So if I buy a table at a flea market, a secondhand table, and it's kind of wobbly, what's going to help it more? If I get an ugly 2x4 and, shore up the middle where it's sagging, get a couple of blocks and put them under the short leg of the table, it's not going to look pretty, but it's going to be strong. It's going to be strengthened. Or I could paint it pink. That would be a reward. Painting it pink ain't going to do anything. It's strengthening. So we would rather have strengthening than happiness in most cases. So be careful of those two things. Reinforcement strengthens, reward is something nice. I know that Skinner does this, but please be careful of this. Remember that Skinner is not the be-all and end-all of behaviorism. There are things that Skinner has said that aren't quite right, and this is one of them. We reinforce behavior, not people. Because if we start talking about reinforcing people, then we start to get into that free will thing. We start to get into mentalism, all kinds of stuff that we really want to stay away from. So make sure you understand that this is a process, not something you do to somebody. And also remember, there is no such thing as reinforcements, plural, or punishments, or praises. Those things don't exist. Okay, so it's reinforcement is a process. Reinforcer is the stimulus that serves to increase the probability of responding, and they're very different things. Okay. All right. Most of you are doing pretty well with summarizing in your own terms. Some of you did not. Remember that four words in a row is considered a quote. And if it's not cited appropriately, it's considered plagiarism. So make sure that you're practicing putting things in your own words. Here I'm taking points off for that kind of stuff, but if I see that in your final paper, that might be an honor code. And you don't want to go through that, and neither do I. So please be careful of that. I do want to talk a little bit about respondent versus operant conditioning. Some of you are talking about this SR thing, and Johnston talks about it too. That's respondent conditioning, okay? Stimulus, response. Notice there's only two terms in that, a trigger and a response. There's no reinforcement contingency in that relationship. If there was, it would be operant. Now, some of you were talking about little Albert as being operant. Little Albert is not operant conditioning at all. Okay, it is responding conditioning where you're pairing a stimulus with another stimulus that evokes a response. It's a pairing procedure. So when you do pairing, those of you who work with kids with autism, this is a respondent procedure, not an operant procedure. Right now, I think I talked about that I'm doing some CEUs and trauma-informed care. And one of the things that you do is that within one of those maybe triggering stimuli, so let's say fireworks, you are going to do some relaxation, so they call it self-regulation, exercises in the present when you're there to do some counter conditioning, if you will. But that's respondent. You're pairing a new stimulus with another stimulus. So that is responding conditioning. The reinforcement piece, when a behavior is reinforced, that's operant. Or if it's punished, that's operant. Let's see. There was a question during the discussion board about genetics and natural selection. I believe I put in selection by consequences by B.F. Skinner. If I didn't, please let me know, and I'll send that in an announcement. Absolutely, operant learning, natural selection, ontogeny, phylogeny, the whole thing works together. And genetics do play a role in our behavior. And now we're learning about epigenetics, that the behaviors of our parents and their experiences also shape our genetics, which then in turn affect our behavior. So yeah, absolutely. But genetics are not the be-all and end-all. Some genes are expressed, some genes aren't. So really the answer of nature versus nurture, the correct answer is yes. There is no either or, it's both. And I've heard people say genetics load the gun and the environment pulls the trigger, although I'm always a little reticent to use any type of gun analogy in a school. Basically what it's saying is that genetics set the tone, but the environment then determines whether or not genes are expressed or not. Keep in mind, the same thing that happens with genetics is the same thing that happens with behavior. No two people have the same learning history. Even if you are an identical twin, you do not have the same learning history. An identical situation can be positively reinforcing one person's behavior and negatively reinforcing another. And one of you used the example of providing attention contingent upon self-injury. In that case, for the child, the self-injury ended up being positively reinforcing, but for the person delivering the attention, the cessation of the self-injury was actually the reinforcer, so it was negative reinforcement. So you can have both at the same time. Also, keep in mind that no two people have the same reinforcers or punishers. We may have some common ones, but no two people have the exact same reinforcers and punishers. When I teach this class face to face, what I like to do is I go around the room and I say, you know, what's one thing that you would move heaven and earth to get, and what's one thing you'd move heaven and earth to avoid? And everybody's answer is a little different. And sometimes people are like, oh, that's no big deal. Why would you want to avoid that? Everybody's learning history is different. I like the way you're discussing with each other. Some of you are going back and responding to people. That's what this discussion is about. It's about building community and talking to each other. So keep doing that. That's great. And some of you were talking about the perceptual differences. So Skinner talks about perception as a behavior that is influenced by our environment, contingencies, that type of thing. And we also know that biology plays a factor. If you remember that thing about the dress a couple of years ago, what color is the dress really? There's a new one out with shoes. Are they pink or are they green? I think they're green. You know, is it a 6 or is it a 9? So all of these things come into play, our biology, our learning history, lots of things all come into play to shape that response. So it's not just as simple as an M&M, basically. And I think I talked a little bit about that learning history thing. Functionalism versus structuralism. So structuralism is looking at a behavior and intervening based upon what it looks like or what its structure is. Let's use, for example, classroom management, because it's something that I know pretty well. In classroom management, there are a ton of books on things like, you know, stopping defiance in the classroom, or what to do when people spit or people hit, or they talk back or they smoke or whatever it is. That's a structuralist approach. That's not how behaviors take a look at things for the most part. We do to a point, but we're really more functionalist. We don't care what the behavior looks like so much, except to measure it. What we care about is, what are the antecedents, what are the reinforcers to those behaviors, and what things in the environment are maintaining those behavior. Now, I want to make sure that you understand that when I say behavior, I'm not talking about necessarily inappropriate behavior every single time, okay? Everything is behavior. From cell mitosis to self-injury, it's all behavior. If it's something that's quote-unquote done, it's behavior. So I will correct, and I have been correcting people who say that child is engaging in behaviors, because according to the dead man test, the answer, if someone says they're engaging in behaviors, is, oh, thank goodness, because we, you know, you don't want your kids to be dead, right? So that's very, very important that you understand that behavior is anything we do. So next question, is depression a behavior? Yeah, there are depressive behaviors that people engage in. Are there private events that are behavior? Yeah, sure there are. So yes, it is a behavior. It may be a little bit harder to measure directly, but it is a behavior. Some of you were talking about the medical stuff as unobservable. But in fact, they are observable, just not by the general public. So for example, something like a bladder infection, some of you were talking about that. That can be observed and measured under a microscope using a UTI. Now, do I have the microscope or the training to say, oh, that's, you know, staph bacteria and I need to get a Z-Pak? No, I don't have that training, but somebody else does. So it is observable. Blood pressure is observable. Respiration is observable. Blood oxygen glasses are observable. Digestion's observable. All these things that are inside of us are observable, just not to the general public. Another thing, one last thing about discussion boards is that reinforcement and punishment must be contingent upon a response. So you can't give something to somebody before the behavior occurs and call it a reinforcer. It doesn't work that way. That's a bribe. Okay, that's bribery. Reinforcement and punishment always come after a response and must be contingent. All right, let's get into your inner teaching now. For the most part, you all basically did what I was hoping you all would do. Got to see some of you in the meetings this past week, and that was great. And I'll see others of you later on this week. And I like the fact that y'all are meeting. That's good. So far, so good. There are some of you who still aren't responding to your group. Okay, this comes back to that. You gotta be a part of this, okay? So it's really important that you're responding to your group. What things did I see, and what was I looking for in these questions? Now, remember, there isn't one great answer. Y'all took different angles on it, but there were certain things I was looking for. So first thing is that we don't reinforce people. Never. We always reinforce behavior. For number one, there's a number of things that are wrong with saying I reinforced and it didn't work. Happens all the time. This is going to be probably one of your number one complaints about behaviorism. The first thing is, and some of you rightly pointed this out, is that we don't know what the contingency is. We don't know what behavior is being reinforced. If you're just giving somebody M&Ms, they are going to occur in the future, right? But that's, we don't know. Some of you said that M&Ms may not be a reinforcer, but be careful of saying it's because they don't like M&Ms, or they didn't, or they like something else, or they're not aware that it's a reinforcer. Be careful of those things because those are explanatory fictions. You want to stay very simple in your terms. So there's a number of things that are wrong with this, right? You can't reinforce people. We don't know what she's trying to do. And we don't know if M&Ms are effective as a reinforcer. So in this case, giving a child an M&M, especially if it's just, you know, for doing something, ends up kind of either being more of a reward or just giving someone M&Ms. In which case, yeah, she's right. Her process isn't going to work. Number two, rather tricky one, because I want you to get out of the idea that reinforcers are just for kids with autism, or that we don't have any reinforcers. We most certainly do. Everything that we do, if we keep doing it, it's being reinforced. For the most part, a lot of you got that attention is most likely the reinforcer. You don't have to have good attention, okay? Get rid of this good and bad, okay? There's no value judgments in behavior analysis. There is no good, no bad. There is only increases and decreases, okay? So some of you were saying stuff like loneliness and all that kind of stuff. That's mentalistic, okay? What's reinforcing her behavior? And most likely it's some form of attention, even if it's fighting, even if she's crying, even if she's miserable, it's still positive reinforcement, social positive reinforcement. Here's the thing. It's not attention seeking behavior. Okay. Attention seeking behavior is an explanatory fiction because we don't know what she's seeking. Okay, so it's attention as a reinforcer. So it's attention maintained behavior. For number three, almost all of you got the key is that reinforcement and punishment are two different things. The positive equals plus, negative equals minus. Most of you got, you know, reinforcers are only reinforcers if they change behavior. So bravo for that. Let's see here. I did want to clarify what automatic reinforcement is. Automatic reinforcement is under the skin type of reinforcement, but, and some of you said removal of anxiety, and that certainly, that could be a negative reinforcer for number two. That's fine. But keep in mind that there's still observable and measurable things. So shoulders could go down, breathing could change, that type of thing after she texts. That is not automatic reinforcement. Automatic reinforcement is changes in biological properties, contingent upon a behavior. So for example, running produces an endorphin rush in some people that can be automatically reinforcing for the next run. Drinking makes changes in your neurochemistry that may make drinking more or less likely in the future. So that's automatic reinforcement and punishment. Okay, so just because it's under the skin doesn't necessarily mean it's automatic. All right, I think we got to all that. Let's get to your questions. Oh, we got lots. One of the things is if you say, what's number 27 and 28 on the reading guide, I won't necessarily be able to answer those in that way. It's better if you ask the question directly because I don't have the reading guide right in front of me. Trying to understand negative reinforcement, the example of getting a sunburn while not using sunscreen, then using sunscreen so not to burn, the sunburn was taken away. So sunburn is a negative reinforcer. Sunscreen was added, so sunscreen a positive reinforcer. I think I see where you might be getting mixed up because you're looking at the thing, okay? Let's look at the process. So what's the behavior? The behavior is putting on that sunscreen. So it isn't that the sunscreen is added, so you're more likely to put it on. The sunscreen was already there, you just didn't do it, got a sunburn. So next time, to avoid minus, take away, negative, that sunburn, you're going to put on the sunscreen. Okay, so it's more about taking away an aversive in this case. What are ways that we learn to tolerate delay to reinforcement? That is mostly in the lecture. And those are things like increasing the schedule of reinforcement, putting little reinforcers along the way to get to those big goals. If you think of weight loss, that's always one of the big ones, or maybe getting ready to run a race because I'm going to be doing the Soldier Field 10 mile. So if any of you are in the Chicago area over Memorial Day weekend and want to wear your Mason colors, and come out, please do. And in order for me to train, because 10 miles is a little aversive, I have to put in small reinforcers along the way. So if I just said, okay, I'm getting on the treadmill and gonna run 10 miles, yeah, that's not happening. But I can work my way up to it. So that's a form of delay discounting, being able to tolerate those delays. Explaining adventitious reinforcement and superstitious behavior. Okay, so sometimes a reinforcer will be delivered, and that reinforcer might reinforce a behavior that you could say is not necessarily meant to be reinforced, although there's problems with that. So you might turn into having some superstitious responses. So let's say I hear a song and I play that song, and every time I hear that song, it just so happens that my boss comes in and has an issue with my work. Every time I listen to that song, there has been some adventitious punishment. So when that song comes on, I'm like, no, I don't want my boss to come in. And I turn off that song. So the song itself is an adventitious reinforcer. Turning off the song to or it's an adventitious punisher. Let me go back and fix that. The song itself is an adventitious punisher. So I hear the song, boss comes in, I hear that song again, very aversive. I turn off the song to terminate the possibility of that aversive coming in. That's superstitious behavior. So if you have any quote unquote lucky routines, you might want to take a look and see how'd they come to be? What things were reinforced around that? So let's say you always have to bounce the ball 3 times before you shoot a foul shot. It's most likely because when you did that, you were more likely to make the foul shot than you would be if you didn't bounce the ball 3 times, or if you bounced it 4 times, or if you bounced it 2 times. That making of the foul shot is actually a super is an adventitious reinforcer. The three dribbles is the superstitious behavior. Hope that helps. Why does reinforcement not equal reward or bribery? I think we covered that. In what type of a behavioral situation would superstition be used? Remember that this is not an intervention, okay? Superstitious behavior is not an intervention in any way. It's a process. It's a phenomenon, okay? So this course is talking about processes and phenomena, not interventions, okay? What do we do if a group lead does not post a discussion on the day that it's due? I think I answered that. Lots of superstition, adventitious reinforcement. Clarify dreams. I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, so ask that again, a little bit more clearly, and I'll answer it on the next clarifying lecture. Blackboard states that replies are due Sunday 11:59, but the checklist states Monday. I didn't know that there were Sundays in there. It is Monday. Okay, so Monday is the correct time. Are we required to stay logged into Blackboard for 4.7 hours weekly in order to meet the requirements for the BACB? Those have actually been taken away. So you don't necessarily have to be there for 4.75 hours. However, we've given you that kind of work so that if you put in about 5 to 6 hours a week, you'll do fine. Some of you are way behind that. So while I'm not going to be checking, and if you're 4.7, you're not going to pass the course or something like that, I do recommend that you put in at least 5 to 6 hours a week on this work. Let's see. I talked about groups. What do you consider to be more effective, positive or negative reinforcement? Depends on the behavior. Depends on the reinforcer. There is no like one's more effective than the other. We will talk a little bit in 623 about how negative reinforcement and punishment can lead to coercion. But let's save that for 623. This isn't necessarily about effectiveness as much as it is our learning history. Do we do the discussions when it's our week or every week? Well, you'd still have to discuss every single week. Most of these things I answered about the discussion boards. In our teaching activities, should we rotate roles within the group? It doesn't matter, although that is preferred. I think you should rotate roles. You'll stay in the same group the entire semester, but I do recommend that you kind of move things around a little. Is there a way to determine if your consequence is not reinforcing a negative or unwanted behavior? I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, but I think what you're trying to say is how do you know if reinforcement is happening? If a behavior continues, it's being reinforced. If a behavior bursts and then stops, it's not being reinforced anymore. Whether that's a appropriate behavior, an inappropriate behavior, anything. If it's reinforced, it continues. We're going to get into assessments in 623 to see which ones they are. So sit tight for that. But basically, if the response either goes up or it stays, it's being reinforced. Finding your articles with your assigned researcher, would they be listed in the citing section of the articles with their names highlighted? You're finding the articles. I'm not giving you the articles. You have to search for them yourself, and you need to do those through the library database. So you would put their name in the library database and find those five articles. And Anne Melville can help you with that. She's the librarian. The ballet example in the study guide. Can you explain a bit more why anyone would stay? Okay, so if you remember the ballet example, in the ballet example, the ballerinas are under a pretty strict teacher who yells at them a lot. And we've all had a teacher who's a yeller, right? So why would anybody want to stay in an environment where you're constantly being yelled at? Think about the fact that everybody's reinforcers and punishers are different, okay? So for some people, being yelled at can be a reinforcer. And if you think of kind of the popularity of people like Jillian Michaels, for that population, being pushed and yelled at is a reinforcer. And mostly it's from people's histories, tend to come from pretty stern environments, where there's not a lot of praise forthcoming because they've learned that attention being yelled at can be a positive reinforcer. So those people are more likely to stay, whereas the people who for whom being yelled at is a punisher, they're going to leave. So that's the difference between the two. What are some factors that can affect the power of a reinforcer? Delay in timing, and the other one is magnitude. How much you're what's the magnitude of the reinforcer? So there's a difference between, whoa, good job, and you did nice. Good. Depending on the situation, you can have too much magnitude, you might end up with satiation, and in some cases, you might not have enough magnitude. Okay, three more questions. I was thinking about spiritual freedom in discussion of Ch Johnson's chapter one and the idea of choosing to do a behavior to help someone. So, first of all, I do know that most Western religions talk about, free will and things like that. I am not here to trample on anybody's religion or anybody's faith tradition or anything like that. Please know that. But I still have to tell you what Skinner said. When one does a charitable deed, there is a pleasant feeling that one receives as a consequence. I understand that a feeling is not observable, but I would attribute that to positive reinforcement as a good feeling added as a consequence for helping that person. Since it's not observable, does that mean it's not considered an ABA? No, it means that it's being considered differently. So, at first I thought you were going to get into, is there such a thing as an altruistic behavior? And, from a behavioral standpoint, we would say, no. Now there's a reinforcer there somewhere or you're not doing it. Whether that is, volunteering at a food pantry and, giving food to people, maybe getting thank yous from people. It might be just, the delivery of it itself is the reinforcer. But what about that good feeling? Well, certainly there's times when you might not have gotten that good feeling. Maybe somebody was not as, quote unquote, grateful as you had hoped, that type of thing. Oh, they're doing the lawn outside my house. Or whatever. But that feeling really is more of a side effect of reinforcement. It isn't the reinforcer. Okay, so the reinforcer is something else. That may or may not make you feel good. And, if you do feel good, it might magnify the reinforcer. But there's plenty of people who do something altruistic once, feel good about it, and never come back. So I wouldn't necessarily say that that good feeling is what keeps us going. I think it's more complicated than that. What are we supposed to be researching about our person? Could you please clarify what's supposed to be included in the paper or if I'm overlooking the direct instruction? If you look under Getting Started, and also if you look in the template has pretty specific instructions about what you need. What you're going to be doing is you picked your person, you're going to find five pieces of literature. Can be books or it can be peer-reviewed articles. Can't be websites, can't be newspaper articles, can't be blogs, that type of thing. And what you're going to do is that you're going to synthesize all those together And in the end, you're going to be saying, what was that person's contribution to behavior analysis? Why were they on the list, basically? So you're going to find five things and find out, why did I put them on the list? And specific instructions are in the template. So go to the template, read those. It'll tell you how to do the presentation, how to do the draft, how to do all that kind of stuff. I'll be assigning partners later on in the term. So you don't have a review partner yet. You'll get one. But basically, the gist of it is you have your author, and now you have to find out why they were on the list. What is their contribution? Let's see. Second question for the wiki. Can you please go over it? I think I just did. So you might want to rewind back a little bit. All right. Thank you. Keep up the good work. Y'all are doing great. Keep doing those Quizlets, and we'll talk to you soon.